So we are dealing now with consummations which are not personality consummations, they are soul consummations, but we notice that the consummation in Capricorn Cancer is a union of the two. It is definitely working as a soul within matter. So you become the initiate who by will can choose to incarnate for purposes of service, and then you are involved in a salvaging task, which Cancer, with its rulership by Neptune, controls, because Neptune and Cancer are the ocean, and we are cleaning the kind of matter that flows around the soul expression in the lower worlds until one can express more and more as a true soul, even in the worlds of lower form. A lot of choice is involved here. So we've been led back to Cancer and a salvaging type of approach. And going on, I guess now we're in 99D, maybe even for the paragraph before we were. Aquarius and Leo, personality interests as an expression of the individual. And this can be considered kind of a Leo tendency, but Aquarius as well, because there are some very expressive Aquarians who are multi-talented, the sort of polymath approach, a person capable along many different simultaneous lines, in which the riches of the causal body are made available to the one who expresses them, the lower worlds. Personality interests as an expression of the individual are submerged, there's the water imagery, in the good of the whole, which is so ultimately Aquarian, right? Notice this is a kind of consummation. It's a consummation in Leo Aquarius. It's not just a consummation in Leo, because part of this consummation has to do with the good of the whole, which is particularly Aquarian, although we can say that the higher Leo and Aquarian emerge in seeking the good of the whole. Selfish individual man, and that can be, you know, under either of these, under either Leo or Aquarius. Aquarians can be extremely selfish. I mean, as we said, turning the shower head of all good things upon oneself so that one is just, bathed in energetic possibilities which one uses only for oneself. It's a peculiar form of selfishness when the sort of fountain of life could be turned on others. The selfish individual man under Leo or Aquarius becomes the world server. It's typically Aquarian, but Leo should be included because we're told that heights of noted service are then reached in both signs. So the consummation involves both, kind of a union of the two signs. Involves the union of the two signs. Consummation is not just only found in Aquarius. You can consummate a series of lives at a high stage of development in any one of the signs. And probably we will find initiates consummating their lives in many of the signs, or at least with some of the less characteristic signs, not so much associated with the fourth or fifth degree, actually as part of their incarnation. I mean, when you look at Ramakrishna, well, first look at Vivekananda. He had very strong Capricorn. A little bit of Sagittarius, I think, some Libra, but Capricorn was the dominating thing. You look at Ramakrishna, who Vivekananda considered to be his teacher, you have very strong Aquarius Pisces. That is his particular consummating sign indication. Let's see, who else is, well, look at Father Damien. That was a great, I think, fourth initiation consummation. We have a sun in Capricorn, Taurus rising. We could say that Taurus participated in this consummation, and certainly Capricorn did as well. The DK mentions Father Damien and Jesus, their deaths in one breath. And he says the death of a Father Damien or of a Master Jesus, Jesus or a Father Damien, is a very different affair from the death of a Hitler, for instance. Other consummations, you know, final incarnations. Maybe, I don't know, maybe the Dalai Lama isn't quite final. But if you were, it would be Cancer and Libra in his case. Certainly, he seems to be a third-degree initiate and maybe is living that life of renunciation, which makes of him the fourth-degree initiate. Could be Albert Schweitzer between the third and the fourth degree. Here we have for him Capricorn, Sun, and Libra rising. Probably we could think of a number of great initiates who looked like they were almost taking the fourth degree, and we could see what type of consummation they had under what particular signs. I don't think we can be too rigid. It's possible to reach heights of soul expression under any of the signs. It all depends on your soul ray, on your particular circumstances. There's many ways to get to the goal. We have some signs which are characteristically associated with, some initiations characteristically associated with certain signs, but we should not be too rigid about that. Probably Francis Bacon was an initiate of the fourth degree, I suspect. He had Aquarius, definitely, but, very strong Aquarius in every respect. Krishnamurti was taking the fourth degree, we are told, in this book about the initiate in the dark cycle. And he had a Taurus sun and Aquarius. So these are fitting signs of consummation, the great light of Taurus being a consummatory kind of opportunity. And, you know, here we actually have that. As we're discussing here, the dark night of the soul becomes the radiant sun. So he was a great illuminator, certainly. He had the two signs of the nuclear world servers and of the hierarchy. Okay, Taurus, nuclear world servers, hierarchy, Aquarius. Now Pisces, Virgo, he seems to essentialize here. When he reaches Pisces, Virgo, he seems to have less to say. Virgo, Pisces, the form, which is Virgo, releases the indwelling soul. And so we have to think of Pisces as the sign of final release, and Virgo as the form, as when it says, let matter reign. The savior of the world appears and nurtures. He turns around, so the savior of the world, which is obvious Piscean consummation, Piscean, P-I-S-C-E-A-N, friends, okay, C-E, appears and nurtures. There is a interesting word, isn't it? It's so Virgoan, isn't it? Virgoan word, nurtures the hidden souls in Virgo. And we saw at first that that matter had attracted the attention of the soul and virtually buried it in all the processes of matter. But now the world savior has this great release and consummation of identification and realization and revolves upon the pedestal of light. So let's just see, the Piscean savior revolves upon the pedestal of light and saves the souls buried by, I don't know how to spell, buried by the material processes of Virgo. Okay, that's a bit of a run through these opposites of interplay. Consummatory interplay. Let's call it that. Consummatory interplay. Should there be only one M? Or is this not a word? Well, let's leave it as two M's. Maybe it doesn't exist. We were given in the previous tabulation relationships based upon the semi-sextile, which is like Cancer and Leo, the sextile, which is like Scorpio and Capricorn. We were given the square, which is like Aries and Capricorn and Sagittarius and Pisces. We were given the trine, which is Libra and Gemini, Gemini and Libra. We were given the in conjunct, which is Sagittarius and Taurus, Taurus and Sagittarius. Taurus and Sagittarius particularly, and also Virgo and Aquarius, Aquarius and Virgo. We were given all the intermediary geometrical relationships, but then we came to the idea of consummation. This should be number six. Oh, heavens, how did that happen? Well, I think, you know, I think you know what I mean here. This really should be number six. So I'm just going to put it, oh, it says number seven. We don't want that. Anyway, there's five. And we can make this a six. How do we do that? Sorry for the detail. Little house cleaning, right? And we'll bring it up to six because it is really the sixth axis. The Virgo, Pisces, Pisces, Virgo axis is the sixth. And we have this sign of consummation where the solar angels through the exalted Venus rise in Pisces with their work completely finished and then turn to their saving mission. To our present solar angels, we could very well say that we are as the hidden souls buried in the material processes of Virgo, and they are the liberated souls, having ventured to Sirius, notice the Pisces-Sirius connection, it does strongly exist, learning the art of salvation and have returned as hearts of fiery love on as part of the general saviorship directed by Sanat Kumara, who is the great sacrifice and the great savior. Okay, we will go on in just a moment. Right. Okay, friends, I'd like to continue here. So, we have talked about the interplay, the consummatory interplay. Maybe there is no such word, as I said, but it's close enough. You understand what I mean. And this is very much under the light of interplay of Gemini, comparing the opposites and somehow of the opposites, learning about the opposites from contrast. That's what we've been doing. So if you happen to be one of those people who has the sun and the moon in opposing positions, or you have the sun and ascendant in opposing positions, or the moon and the ascendant, just see how these interplaying dynamics work out in your life, and in hopefully along the line, which takes you towards a consummation which is not that of the personality, but which, you know, supposedly you have reversed the wheel to a degree, right? And are traveling in the direction of soul release. And you may be pretty much involved in the kinds of interplay we found in the 12-fold tabulation, namely, you know, this one, right? That kind of, those kinds of interplays. And, you know, if I'm an Aries person, you know, I might say, well, Aries turns towards Capricorn. So I might look towards the position of Capricorn in my life and the Capricorn people that are in my life and what Capricorn may mean and how far I have turned towards Capricorn and to what extent I do recognize and experience the divine plan and work with the will. Or if I'm a Cancer rising or something, I might say, to what extent do I vision life in Leo, and have I achieved that to any particular extent, and to what extent do I see that the whole is seen as one, and so forth. Use these particular mantras, these mantras for the intermediate stage, and then perhaps you may also find yourself approaching one of the consummations we've dealt with here as well, and if you are, then through somewhat exact knowledge of what they can represent, see if you can facilitate their achievement. That's the purpose of astrology. You know, things happen anyway. But if you know more about the process, you can get other things out of the way so that the things that are supposed to happen happen more directly and without resistance and in a better form, and maybe even faster. So you will therefore note that when the pull of the energies, let's see, let me get this straight. When the pull of the energies pouring into and through the signs of the zodiac is in the direction of form expression, which is basically subdiaphragmatic circulation, then the result of the interplay between the opposite signs leads to some aspect of definite personality manifestation. You know, the human love controls, or at the moment of consummation, you realize your prison, or there is directed personality effort, you know, with the Gemini Sagittarius interplay, or you reach a point of crystallization, very stable apparently, but just waiting to be shattered, or you become the dictatorial self in the, you know, the dictatorial leader of groups in the Aquarius Leo thing, or in fact, perhaps, how is it put here? I want to look at that. This one, which involves Virgo and Pisces, you're so preoccupied with matter, which you are probably handling pretty well, that the life of the soul is hidden, and you become, you know, engaged in the lower material life, however successfully, in an ordinary sense, but not successful in a spiritual sense. These are the personality consummations, and there are six of them. So it's in the direction of form expression, and the result of the interplay between the opposite signs leads to some aspect of definite personality manifestation. Try to look at your life and say, well, when did that happen for me, or did it happen at all in this life? And if it did, how did you turn things around so that you find yourself heading towards a more spiritual type of consummation? Now, you say this personality manifestation being determined largely by the ray of the personality. Sometimes I think of my own life, you know, as an opera director under the fourth ray for a long time, probably a number of lives on the fourth ray. And did I ever reach that point of personality consummation on the fourth ray when I did my best job, you know, directing an opera or something of that nature? I certainly had a career along that line, and then I brought it to a close and switched to a more soul ray oriented consummation, which is in process. You know, we're all a work in process, aren't we? When the life tendency is being withdrawn from form, you're just not as interested in it, right? You have to work in it, but form for its own sake looks a little empty, right? When the life tendency is being withdrawn from form and the soul is in process of revelation, then there is soul or egoic emphasis heading towards a consummation which will be typical of the ray of your soul and also perhaps of your rising sign. You know, I as a secondary soul who has a Cancer rising sign, I would love to achieve a consummation where the whole is seen as one, constantly, persistently, without interruption. Okay, I'll let you know when it happens. It's the experience of isolated unity in a way. And some phase of that we can certainly experience before we're a master, right? A master has the full measure of isolated unity, but the rest of us may be striving for that. One of the methods of soul fusion. When the life tendency is being withdrawn from form and the soul is in process of revelation, then there is soul or egoic emphasis. So just look at your possibilities of consummation. Look at your sun sign and consider its opposite, whether you have something in that sign or not. Look at your rising sign and consider its opposite, whether you have something in that sign or not. And combine your soul ray with that. Look to see whether there's been some recapitulation of a personality consummation. And if there has been, at your stage of evolution, how you reversed yourself from that, and then are aiming for a consummation which is more along the line of the more along the line of your rising sign and your soul ray. And then whatever other temporary relationships you may have been passing through, intermediate relationships you may have been passing through, based on this large tabulation on page 332 and 333. If one was to work with these alone make a tremendously rich method of getting a view of what is happening spiritually in your life and where you are and what you're trying to do about it. So this soul or egoic emphasis and the type of consummation towards which we are heading, let's just be satisfied with that. I mean, one day we may be born with ascendant and sun exactly opposed to each other, and then maybe that kind of consummation we're talking about in its fullest nature may occur for us. But meanwhile, we are heading towards it, let's just say. That is the humble and wise position to take. And just look at the possible interplay between your rising sign and the opposite sign. Add your egoic ray in there and see where you are as you move towards the kind of consummation which is indicated in the interplay section, which we just dealt with. So here again will appear, DK is emphasizing this, the necessity for a knowledge of the point in evolution of the individual whose horoscope is under consideration. How many times must he mention this? But of course, this is the very thing that eludes us, because maybe we're just not intuitive enough and do not have enough experience with human nature really to know. But somehow we will get indications, broad indications at first. Is this individual striving in a personality sense for personality satisfaction? Is this individual really striving for soul service and expression, or is there a battle going on somewhere in between, and is the wheel in a pronounced manner turning in both directions? And is there a rending process occurring which is causing this much distress to the individual? I would indicate at this point that in studying any of the signs, it will be wise to study at the same time its opposite or consummating sign. Really, so much can be done by this Geminian method of study, where you note the factors in the opposites which are the same, and note the factors which are distinctly different. And this even works out in form. Like, you know, let me just put it this way in kind of a strange little example. This is a formal distinction between Sagittarius and Gemini. You generally recognize, depending on what other influences are there in the position of ruling planets, that the Sagittarian chin is receded and the Gemini chin is more pointed and forward jutting. It's an opposition. At the same time, there's a lot of Mercurian ability in both of these signs. They're both very mobile. They're both involved with the building of the Antikorana. Somewhere in the vast storehouse of my computer, I have all of these similarities and differences worked out, and I have to see whether I've made them available on Makara. I've talked about all kinds of similarities and differences between the signs so that a person can understand how it is that the opposites are distinct and how it is that the opposites really unite. DK goes on to say, much that I could, for instance, say in connection with the sign Cancer has already been said in connection with its opposite. You're talking about similarities between signs. And the same will be true of all the signs we are now going to study, because we're in the latter part of the book, or the latter part of this study of the signs sequentially going clockwise. And he will have mentioned, in order to clarify the signs he's been studying, something about the opposite sign. So just try to be clear in your mind about what are the true distinctions between opposite signs, and in what way do they kind of meet in a unifying figure eight, which brings them both together closer and closer, closer towards the center, until they virtually become like one sign. Okay, it will be clear to you why the Moon and Neptune, transmitting the energy of the psychic nature and of the form, and I think we know which is which, right? Neptune transmits the psychic nature, and the Moon, oftentimes associated with the psychic nature, yes, but really when it is so, veiling Neptune, the Moon is the form, plus the tendency to achieve through the medium of conflict, and how would that be, via the Moon, which brings in the fourth ray, perhaps through an undiscovered fourth ray planet, rule Cancer so potently, both directly and indirectly. We have Mercury in the fourth ray coming in indirectly through Aries. We have the Moon, fourth ray, coming in through Cancer itself. The Moon has no radiation of its own. This is really important. And although the Moon position is definitely the apparent focal point of energies which are effective, both natally and when progressed and directed. It's not really the moon. Now, whatever may be the systemic physics that makes this possible, we don't know about that yet. The true science aspect of astrology has yet to be revealed. Right now, we're just trying to prove that there's something there. And when there are astrological positions, there is a correlation with something happening within matter form on these lower 18 subplanes. Right now, we're just trying to prove that. Later, what I call the hyperphysics of these situations will be revealed, and I'm sure that we will find that the creation of our planetary logos is a most intricate thing, way beyond the mind of man presently to fathom. So, DK is promising plenty of conflict for the Cancerian individual, not necessarily because of the third ray of the seventh ray coming through Cancer, but because of the way the fourth ray energies are involved. The medium of conflict is strongly connected both directly through the moon and indirectly through Mercury and Saturn, being such a strong ruler of Libra and of Capricorn, is also a strong producer of conflict. No question about that. They control the form and the lower psychic nature and produce the battleground, later to be transmuted into the burning ground. Interesting phrase, isn't it? How battleground becomes a burning ground when the forces allied with the soul take over. So let's say that. When the forces allied with the soul take over. The battleground may be between the desire, aspiration, and instinct. I mean, we can find battlegrounds, we can find internecine warfare going on between all of the different factors in our energy system. We have three factors or four, and any two of them can produce a battleground, or any one of them contrasted with the others can produce a battleground. Different types of battlegrounds there are. You know, let's say the body doesn't have the energy to do it, but the desires want to. That's a battleground right there. Or the body is full of energy, but one just cannot motivate oneself to use that energy. That's a battleground between the astral and the physical nature. And, you know, we're familiar with those battlegrounds between the mind and the emotions and so forth. Burning grounds are focal opportunities for purification and the discarding of all type of energy patterns which prevent the passing through the door of initiation. So these control the form and the lower psychic nature. And of course, in a way, Neptune controls also the higher psychic nature, doesn't it? I mean, in a way. Also, later, higher psychic nature, because the Buddhic plane is there, and aspects of the intuition of the soul, and even monadic touches, all much related to Neptune, the great gift waves of divine love, all higher psychic Neptune. But for practical purposes, whatever the form is for us, and whatever our desire nature is very much a moon Neptune or Moon Mars. So we have to use Uranus to transmute the battleground into the burning ground. And if we look at that, how would we do it? Well, we would say we transmute Mars. Conflicted nature of Mars, conflicted and conflicting. And then Mars will burn as it should, using fire by friction with the addition of solar fire also. And Uranus, the planet of transmutation, will lead to transformation and transfiguration. And wherever transformation is needed or some sort of beneficent change in line with archetypes, then Uranus steps in. So the burning ground will come. We're on these two, the lower psychic nature and the form, face in the final conflict their higher correspondence, the soul and the spirit. In which case, and this is very interesting, because then the soul becomes the form and the spirit the higher psychic nature, or a correspondence of it. For matter is spirit at its lowest point, and spirit is matter at its highest. And the HPB quote goes on as one of DK's favorites. And we have to always realize this continuity between spirit and matter. There are many implications to it. It is, as it were, of one substance. In these words, you have the true clue to the Cancer-Capricorn relationship. It's that great diamond which relates, Capricorn is very material, and Cancer can be very apparently spiritual. They are both really the same thing, but generally Capricorn represents the higher aspect of the diamond, and maybe I really shouldn't even say that. There is a lower Cancer-Capricorn connection in density within the lower worlds, and there is a higher Buddhic-Atmic connection. Cancer, in a way, through Neptune representing Buddhi, and Capricorn through Saturn representing Atma. And so we get the sense of the continuity of the influences of these two signs all the way from the highest aspect of Brahma, which is the Atma, all the way down to the lowest aspect of Brahma, which is the dense physical plane. When to these potent influences is added the force of the seventh ray, which is found prominent in both of these signs, producing a synthesis of expression upon the physical plane, for both are form-building signs using the form-building rays 3 and 7. Of course, the real, in a way, form-builder is the second ray, but the manipulation of form into the design conceived by the great geometrician on the second ray. This is done by the third ray and the seventh. So when to these potent influences is added the third ray, the seventh ray producing the synthesis of expression upon the physical plane, and the third ray producing intense activity in matter, you will note how in this sign, he is still talking about Cancer, really, how in this sign all the energies concerned tend to bring about the incarnation of the soul in the three worlds of experience. So we've got third ray, we've got seventh ray, and we have this magnetic attraction of the soul into form under the lure of the magical lure of the Cancerian energies. But we should not leave out Capricorn as if to conceive that Capricorn only rules the heights and Cancer only rules the depths. I tried to explain that Buddhi Atma is very much Cancer Capricorn through the rulers involved, and how the densest form of concrete expression is really Capricornian in nature, maybe even denser than Cancer. So they both have everything to do with with concretion on the lower levels, with Capricorn adding even more concretion than Cancer does, and they both have the third and the seventh ray. The thing, though, about Capricorn, that it has the first ray, and that's not visible in Cancer. And this means, with that first ray, that there can be a breaking loose of the bonds of matter, and through detachment arising into the higher worlds towards one's own true nature, which is the spirit. That's the Capricornian ability. Perhaps Neptune can, Cancer can also rise into the higher worlds, but it's done not through the first ray, but more through the sensitivity of Neptune, which is correlating with the, well, the love petals of the egoic lotus, and with one of the synthesis petals, and with the Buddhic plane, and with the monadic plane, and even onto the cosmic astral plane at some point of development. Not our point, but the Christ's point of development. The power of Venus in this sign, that is, when Venus is in Cancer, presumably is what we mean, when Venus is in Cancer, and I think is one of the decanates involved here, where DK points to the Venus rulership of a particular decanate in Cancer, tends to make the mind the servant of the personality. And this is aided by the third ray of active intelligence. But we would have to say, I think, that this occurs at a certain point in evolution only. Later, why not make it possible for the soul to irradiate the lower sheaths, veils, vestures, you know. Why not that? Why should the soul, as it descends into Cancer, not be more powerful than the power of the lunar vehicles? And why not have the soul shine through and help to clarify, purify, render translucent, and even transparent the lower vehicles? Why not that? But, you know, at the beginning, I guess this is a kind of a unique perspective DK is giving. You know, we oftentimes think when we think Venus and Cancer, well, the person has a beautiful home. You know, they love art in their home. Or the home is the place of what soul culture, that kind of thing. But why not have the power of the soul descend into the lunar realm and somehow redeem the instinctual tendencies of the lunar realm? That also would be possible. It all depends at what stage of evolution we find ourselves. Thus, the stage is set for the appearance of the soul in form. And in a way, this is the appearance of the Venusian soul in the Cancerian lunar form. You would find it an interesting study to compare the effects of these ray potencies as they find expression in Cancer, namely the third and seventh ray constellationally, and the fourth and sixth ray, also a ray of struggle, talking about Cancerian struggles. Let's say these are the third and seventh ray constellationally, and the fourth and sixth planetarily. So the effects of these ray potencies as they find expression in Cancer upon, gosh, everything tends towards manifestation, doesn't it? It's tend towards incarnation. You know, it's interesting to realize in terms of human longevity, when there have been comparisons here, we have found that Cancer and Capricorn, when they are powerfully accented in the chart, give a certain tenacity of the form. There's a tendency to really hang on to the realm of the seventh and third ray, that is the realm of the lower vehicle, the physical vehicle, and to persist in that. We know how tenacious both of these signs can be. So the effect is really to hold in incarnation. And this is true not only of Cancer, but of Capricorn. I've been a Mason for a long time, and somehow there's a lot of Capricorn in the old form of the Masonic Lodge, and many of the old Masons are affected by Saturn and Capricorn, and they just persist. They just hang in there, maybe in a sometimes mummified condition, although improvements are underway with Keith Bailey and Ancient Universal Mysteries and all of the Masons all over the world who are attempting to reform Masonry. But some of the old ones, you know, they're strongly affected by Capricorn, even Cancer, and they do persist. So you would find it an interesting study to compare the effects of these ray potencies as they find expression in Cancer upon. And you see, DK, what is he doing? He's DK is almost like he's pointing out further assignments. He's pointing out further assignments to be undertaken in the new esoteric schools. He's always giving these assignments out, and any one of them would be a worthy and even lengthy research project. Yes. So maybe he will be in incarnation at the time when these schools really take form, and he's certainly in a position to be a managing director behind the scenes of such schools, certainly. So you will find it an interesting study to compare the effects of these ray potencies as a fine expression in cancer upon the unevolved man as he demonstrates form control, you know, the tendencies of form control whilst still under the influence of matter. You know, it's very important to hold the form together, whatever that form may be, whether it's one's own form or the form of some creation, and to use the managerial seventh and third rays to make that form do what one thinks it should do. The effects of the potencies, third and seventh ray, upon the evolved man, initiate and savior, that's a progression, isn't it? The evolved man is advanced and he's becoming the disciple. The initiate is still more, the savior is still more, as he demonstrates soul control. Now, the soul is also a form, isn't it? Let's just say that the egoic lotus is also a form and has to be controlled properly so that the causal energies can be wisely wielded in lower form. The forces which controlled the soul whilst dominated by form, because, you know, the whale swallows Jonah here, become the instruments for world service when the soul directs, or, you know, when when there is direction of the lower forces from the temple of Solomon, temple of solar man, as Manly Hall has called it, when there is direction of the lower forces. So third and seventh ray are very managerial. They are administrative rays. And the third ray, once it masters what is called action right, you know, the rending of the blinding veil, the clear pronouncing of the truth, and action right, becomes a very fine and efficient and administrative ray and helps to loosen up some of the rigidity of the seventh ray. So these are two manifestational rays. They are financial rays. They are very good at intelligently controlling matter in an orderly form, in an orderly method. As these results are studied, you will eventually arrive at an insight into the relationships which we touched upon earlier when we discussed the rulers of this sign, namely exoteric and esoteric, which brought the Cancer subject into contact with Virgo, Aquarius, and Scorpio. Now, how so? Well, the moon rules in Cancer, Virgo, and Aquarius, right? In an orthodox manner in Cancer, in an esoteric manner in Virgo, in a hierarchical manner in Aquarius. And it even manages to fall in Scorpio. So there is a relationship there as man overcomes his lunar tendencies, the tendencies of the lunar vehicles. And from another perspective, the relationship is that of Neptune, which is the veiled ruler, veiled by the moon esoterically in Virgo, and veiled by the moon hierarchically in Aquarius. And since it is a sixth ray planet, is connecting with the sixth ray of Mars, which is found in Scorpio. And let's see, any other sixth ray there? No, it's Scorpio, mostly. And also the sixth ray of Virgo, constellationally considered, the Neptune of Cancer is aligning with that ray energy. There's a lot of devotion and dedication and persistence in the whole project of motherhood. Great devotion and willful persistence over time. A person really learns how to be subject to the forces of the material building process for a long time, and it cannot be rushed or intervened with except at one's peril. The whole question of very difficult question about the liberation of women from unwanted pregnancy, it is more complicated than it appears. We've all been men, we've all been women, and the souls are attracted to us through various circumstances. We have to ask ourselves, I suppose, to what degree we would like to be interrupted if we somehow had made an intention to put in an incarnation regardless of the will of our parents. It is a complicated issue that I think can only be solved from a wide, wide esoteric perspective, and of course humanity is not there yet. So anyway, these different constellations are related through the Moon and Neptune and through the sixth ray, Cancer, Virgo, Aquarius, and Scorpio. And it's the story of the liberation of form. You know, if Scorpio precedes Aquarius, we might say, well, form falls now, and because of and then is transfigured in Aquarius and liberated into the higher worlds. There are many ways to look at this sequence, but Cancer definitely precedes Virgo, even as it did in the previous solar system. From one point of view, you have the imprisonment of the soul. That is in Cancer, and even Virgo, where the material processes control, and the glorification of the personality demonstrated. The glorification of the Virgin being kind of a symbol of that, and Jupiter, the planet of fulfillment, being exalted in Cancer in kind of a lower way, giving a form to which all kinds of desires can be achieved, but they are lower desires. And even in Scorpio, the dweller on the threshold can dominate everything and not give itself up to the spiritual tendencies. And even in Aquarius, there can be a selfish consummation through the use of all the varied energies for the aggrandizement of the separated self. But in terms of the sequence here given, that glorification, where you are all things to all people and you try to do all kinds of things for the glorification of your lower personality, demonstrating your multiple talents, etc., will end with death and defeat in Scorpio because it's just not in line with the plan. From another point of view, you have the revelation of the Christ within the form. Aquarius releases Virgo from her load, right? And that which is conceived in Cancer with the beginning of the human race and is hidden in Virgo, gradually growing into expression and recognized presence, will have a triumphant result in Scorpio, where there is victory of the Christ principle over death, and the revelation of the serving individual, and the final victory over death. Well, it almost seems here, if it's this final victory, and Scorpio, wow, final victory over death, sounds like it associates the sign Scorpio with the fourth initiation. After all, think of it. The fourth initiation is mostly concerned with the fourth ray, right? We just go to the rays and the initiations here, and we go to page 340, and we find initiation number four is connected with the fourth ray, right? And hence, Scorpio provides a great deal of that fourth ray, doesn't it? More fourth ray coming through Scorpio than through any other sign. So maybe we have the very, very talented man for all seasons found in the third degree under Aquarius, but not to say that Aquarius could not preside over the fourth degree as well with its universality. It could. I think Krishnamurti is a good example of that, and so is Francis Bacon, and so is Sir Thomas More. I forget what his rising sign is, but there's a strong Aries in him and Aquarius. Maybe Sagittarius might be his rising sign. Anyway, is it worth going off on a hunt? You know, because he is a prominent fourth degree initiate, and now apparently a master. the so-called Sir Thomas in the initiate books. So let's just see. Famous and cleaner. Famous person for book. Famous persons. Famous and cleaner. Let's try that. And we'll look under more. Sir Thomas. And what? Yeah, it is Sag. Okay, it's Sagittarius. And there's an example of one of those people with Uranus in Scorpio and Neptune there, too. That is a big sacrifice. And that's probably the indication of his fourth degree. I haven't studied the time when Henry the Eighth had him beheaded, mercifully, instead of drawn and quartered, because he did have a good relationship with Thomas More. But that kind of signalizes to me the contrast, these two planets of transcendence, the highest of the synthesizing planets in the house of release in the sign of death. And he was an Aquarian as well. His moon was in Aries. Perhaps that had something to do with the method of death, the beheading, and so forth. But he shattered illusions with that Pluto in the ninth house. As like I said, in the house of a number, in the chart of a number of fourth degree initiates, I haven't checked to Father Damien where he had Uranus. That would be interesting to do. I know I'm off on a tangent here. But it is so in Krishnamurti's case. It's so in Francis Bacon's case. It's so in the chart of Sir Thomas More, Uranus and Scorpio. And just for fun, why don't we see the fourth degree chart of Father Joseph Damien. And, it's probably just as well. Uranus is in Pisces, another one of the Plutonian signs of relinquishment. Very powerful. Sixth ray here, probably sixth ray soul, but really reversing the trends of death with Jupiter in Scorpio. And again with meeting Pluto, the forces of death, head-on in the 12th house of relinquishment. So I think there's a great renunciation going on there. He didn't have to do that. As a priest, he didn't have to go to Molokai Island, but interestingly enough, he's got the moon in Sagittarius, and it took him far afield on a transformative adventure with an 8th house tremendously accentuated. I know this is a little bit of a diversion, but when I see Uranus in a Plutonic sign like that, in the charts of various initiates of the fourth degree, or putatively so, you begin to wonder whether there are not some signatures concerning that. So, from one point of view, you have the imprisonment of the soul and the glorification of the personality. That's not the transfiguration, is it? Okay. Not the transfiguration. It's just the opposite. The glorification of the personality for its own ends, but the glorification of the soul through the personality is another matter. In the other case, you have the revelation of the Christ within the form, which is incipiently Cancer and finally Virgo, and then the great universalized expression of the Christ energy through Aquarius, which is what led me to my tangent here, and the revelation of the serving individual and the revelation of the final victory over death, which suggests the fourth initiation and the relationship of Scorpio to it. When to the above recognitions you add the place of the planet, which the planets hold in this sign, that's Cancer, you have a most remarkable and at the same time rather abstruse situation indicated whenever the cardinal signs are indicated, the abstruseness, or it's a nice way of saying vagueness, or let's just say things can be so abstruse that they are vague for us, a rather abstruse situation indicated, because this is the final cross of initiation, not even at the fourth degree, but more found again at the fifth degree. There are no ones of the three crosses found at the fourth degree. Man himself forms the cross there. Maybe he's his own cross. And because this is the final cross of initiation, one which will only become clear when the final stages of the path are trodden, and well, the path is ongoing, isn't it? Does he mean ending at the fourth degree or ending at the fifth? So we're talking about the moon, we're talking about Neptune, and how they hold a place in this sign, indicating many things, indicating the dense physical nature, the moon does, indicating the psychic nature, Neptune does, indicating the various factors within the causal body, indicating the Buddhic vehicle, indicating monadic salvational tendencies, indicating even the descent of true love from the cosmic astral plane. So when do the above recognitions you add the place where the which the planets hold in the sign, you have a most remarkable and at the same time rather abstruse situation indicated, because it keeps on rising, doesn't it? Neptune rules factors which are far beyond the reach of most of us at this present time, not just the versatile psychic nature. And the moon demonstrates its complete fall under Buddhi and Scorpio, so there is a real transcendence going on there. And because this is the final cross of initiation, a situation then which will only really become clear during the final stages of the path, let's just say fourth and fifth degree, because the path presumably relates to man, RTLS, relates, no relations, RTS, relates to man, and at the sixth degree, man is no longer man. A Chohan is no longer man. They are no longer men, as are the masters. Therefore, only a few hints are possible. Two planets are exalted in this sign, Jupiter and Neptune. Usually we understand that Neptune is a ruler and not exalted, but DK has a different idea about what exaltation means. And notice we have in the sign Virgo a planet which also rules and is exalted, and that is Mercury. Mercury is a orthodox ruler and exalted. Neptune is an esoteric and hierarchical ruler and is exalted. Jupiter is not a ruler but is exalted. And these are both signs of oceanic embrace, embrace of a much wider ring pass knot. The ring pass knot getting wider with each Jupiterian expansion and dissolved by Neptune, making it easier for Jupiter to expand. So two planets are exalted in this sign, Jupiter and Neptune. As this is the sign of rebirth, these two planets indicate the successful development and eventual use of the form aspect. Now, that is a great way of describing Jupiter, isn't it? Whoop, Jupiter. Spell that correctly. So the successful development and eventual use of the form aspect, because there's a lot of the orderly quality in Jupiter, arranging things in the best possible configuration. And remember, Jupiter rules the monadic life under Virgo, where the right hierarchical arrangement is found. Jupiter, Neptune, Uranus, all of them to be found in connection with the monad. and the development of psychic sensitivity, both in the higher and the lower sense. So these are things we can expect from Cancer. Form is successfully developed and used, and a very high form of psychic sensitivity is developed, which is not to say that mediums are not found in rather low grade in the sign Cancer as well as Pisces. As we begin to see, the whole thing is about where we stand on the path. So this will be the end of Esoteric Astrology number 99. It's D, and it's page 341. Page 341, and we will have the beginning of Esoteric Astrology 100. We've reached it. A, on page 341, when next we take up our process. So we are there, and we can just, instead of closing with the entire grading vocation, we will close with the Om. Good. I hope you can take the time to look at these things closely in a way you can have your book open, but the book is open in the format that I've decided to use here. Hopefully you will find your method and this great presentation of the interplay of diverse energies that we are already unconsciously exposed to, and which we will be exposed to with increasing consciousness, will be better understood, and we can utilize these available energies better to live artistically, the art of living, and scientifically, both the fourth and fifth rays involved, and speed our evolution and the evolution of our groups along with all due deliberate speed, as Mary Bailey used to say. You know, she was very first ray, so had that measure and control of the first ray. Nothing rushing, nothing panicked. There is no rush, no hurry from the rules of the road, and yet no time to lose. So the wise use of all of these interplaying energies, this is what we would seek to achieve through this type of study. Obviously, it's only in its infancy, and as I'm studying with you these presentations by the Tibetan, I'm realizing, you know, it really, our understanding of these things, of the amazing interrelations of the available energies, is really in its infancy. And that the members of the great astrological department, and in a way one would have to think that DK is one such member, or certainly affiliated, is profound, profound. And as DK says, one of the most selfless groups that exists, perhaps because they have the amazing perspective on things and understand with great intelligence all of this interplay of the energies. How all these masters manage to supplement each other through their particular areas of knowledge and expertise is a wonderful example to us when considering our own attempts at group consciousness. All right, well, that ought to do it. And we will, at some point very soon, take up the next aspects. Okay, the next pages. I'm wondering how many of these programs we really do have. It's well, well over 100, because I've done so many that have four or five or even six sections of an hour long, so it's quite a bit to study here. I would say, judging from how people have been using it so far, over the years, I might say, over the years. Okay. So.